Whitley, the material from your book actually comes from your own experiences with aliens. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It comes from my own experiences with something. It, in spite of the fact that I lived with this in my life for 11 years, still can't tell you it's aliens. I don't know what it was. But I did learn a process of communication that I don't think I would be able to explain in sort of a straight, bare-bones factual text. And so I chose to make this as part of my fiction, the same way I did the book Majestic, which is kind of fact-based fiction. Because in this case, the facts are just so strange that, you know, it's easier to get into it if you read it as fiction. And I'm hoping that people who are close to this experience or want to be will use the stories in the book as a means of learning how they can communicate also.
How much material in your new book draws on research and experiences with extraterrestrials?
Well, the research I did for this book fell into two different areas. One was research into the government connection, and two was research into publicly available knowledge about possible secret aircraft. And there is an aircraft in my book called the TR in the book, triangular aircraft, which I believe is real. I think it is an accurate description of a real aircraft. I did not have access to any classified sources, so I can't say for sure, but I think it's quite real. I also was aware of the fact that there had been contact between these beings, whether they're extraterrestrials or not, again, I don't know, and various people within the government. And one of the characters in the book is somebody who engages in that type of contact. And I think if it's really going on, this is probably a very accurate picture of such a person's life.
Whitley, since the X-Files, for instance, came out, there's been a heightened interest in the possibility that perhaps our government has been covering up or withholding information about these encounters. Do you believe that that is the case?
Well, I do believe it, and I'll tell you why. It's very personal. First, from my own experiences, obviously something strange is going on, and the face that the government puts on it is that it's all nonsense, and that can't be true. Second, the Roswell incident. My uncle, Colonel Edward Streber, told me after I published Communion that he was involved in cataloging the debris from Roswell that was brought to Wright Field. And he introduced me to his commanding officer, General Arthur Exum, who subsequently gave a brief interview about his involvement in the Roswell incident, essentially saying that it was all true. What General Exum said to me, and I quote, was this: "Everyone from Truman on down knew this was not of this world within 24 hours of our finding it." And frankly, I believe these two honorable men, I think they told the truth.
Some of the victims of the cruel alien experiments in your book are children, and so they therefore appear monstrous. Would monsters be a good way to describe these beings?
I think to a child, my experience has been that it can be very scary, of course, but it's also, we have in the 350,000 letters with detailed experiences in them, a lot of them were from children, and in my book, it's a very mixed bag. The little boy who plays a central role in the book at first is terrified of what's happening, but then fascinated, just pretty much like I was in my own life as an adult, terrified and at first when I realized that there could be no explanation except that it was something in the real world. And then as it gradually came into focus and I began to realize that they weren't going to eat me or kill me or steal my soul or anything, it became fascinating. And he sort of has that same arc in the book.
Your story is set in Madison, Wisconsin. Why did you choose this setting for your book?
Well, it starts in Madison, Wisconsin, and then it moves to Kentucky. And I set it in middle America because it's the middle of the world, the middle class, the ordinary person that this is happening to. If I'd set it in Brazil, I would have set it among the peasants. If I'd set it in another Western country, it would have been among the middle class, because that's who it's happening to.
Empaths play a large role in your book.
Yes.
What is an empath?
An empath is somebody who can communicate with the graves, with the visitors. And it is done mentally. And there are a whole lot of different ways of doing it. It involves the transfer of words, which is not very effective. But you can learn to do it with pictures that you form in your mind. And you will get pictures back from them. And this method of communication can become very disciplined and very effective. And the book, on one level, it's a work of fiction. On another level, it's a textbook. It's a primer. And it'll teach you, from if you read it from beginning to end, just how to communicate with them in this way very productively for you.
Tell us, who in your book, or what, are the three thieves?
Well, the three thieves represent a phenomenon that I have observed and I've seen also reported by others, which is that the graves come in groups of three, and it's almost like there are three bodies with one mind. And in fact, when an abduction is about to happen, one of the things people see beforehand are these triangular three stars coming, moving slowly through the sky, and then the next thing they know, these beings will be around them. And they come in that kind of context. And in the book, they have a sort of slightly sinister, slightly kind of jokey quality, and that's exactly how it felt to be around them. And they're kind of the worker bees of the thing, these groups of three. And that's what the three thieves are called. And I call them the three thieves because they're a little scary and also a little, they have a sense of humor, definitely, about what they do.
You have some very graphic and disturbing imagery in your book of medical anomalies and experiments, otherworldly experiments. Where does the inspiration for these scenes come from?
The experiments and so forth that are described in the book come from experiences of my own and also things that people have told me that I've read about. And there is a sort of context for that. In other words, there's something involving the removal of sexual material from the human body that I experienced myself, that other people also experience in this phenomenon. And it's not too surprising. I mean, if we are dealing with aliens from another world, they would be very interested in the DNA structure, and for example, of the species on the planet. And one of the things they would be doing would be sampling sexual material, of course. We'd do it. In fact, we might do it if it was an intelligent species on another planet who were slightly less advanced as us. Our anthropologists would be saying, don't disturb them. Don't let them know you're here, because it'll change their whole culture. Go in, take samples, observe, but keep hidden. We'd be doing it just like it's being done to us right now.
There are characters in your book who are shunned, or they face professional hardships because of their belief in extraterrestrials, or the visitors, the others. Right. Do you find that the people that you encounter are mainly skeptical, or are they open-minded?
Depends on what level of society they come from. If they are part of the intellectual community, generally they're extremely rejecting of this phenomenon, and the reason is that it is coming in secret. It represents higher knowledge, more intellectual efficiency than they possess, and suddenly they're not at the top of the food chain anymore, and it's threatening. Their resistance to it, the resistance of the scientific community and the intellectual community, has no basis in reality. It is a purely emotional reaction, and from an actual intellectual standpoint, it's not effective thinking. There's adequate physical evidence of this being real for it to be studied coherently by science and addressed by the intellectual culture. Instead, it is laughed at by the intellectual culture and entirely rejected by science. People in my book reflect this. There is a professor whose life has been destroyed because of his belief in this. He's not too dissimilar to people I know in the real world who've made choices, like Dr. John Mack did, to come out and say there's something to this, and have suffered professional damage because of it. They even tried to revoke his license to practice psychiatry and his tenure at Harvard because of what he wrote about and what he said, saying that whatever this phenomenon is, it deserves to be studied, merely that was such a heresy. But then again, you're really talking in terms of the intellectual and scientific community. In their reaction to this, they react in the same way that superstitious people with certain religious beliefs react to phenomena that don't fit their belief system.
Could you tell us a little bit about the interesting quotes and prefaces that you have for each chapter in your book?
Well, I can. I'm a poetry bug, and I love to put those in simply because I enjoy poetry, especially 18th and 19th century poetry so much. The result of which is there's a lot of 18th and 19th century poetry quoted in my books. I try to keep it out of the text because I don't think people find it interesting in a novel, so I put it in the sections to begin each section to sort of set the tone of the section.
Whitley, what is The Grays?
The Grays is a novel based on my own experiences with these strange beings which have come to be called popularly the Grays because they're small, they have big black eyes, and they're sort of gray in color. And partly it's based on my own experiences, partly it's based on my knowledge of the context of this experience that many people have had. And it's an attempt to make a vehicle that will enable more people to understand what contact with the Grays is like, and above all, how to communicate with them usefully during the contact process, because it is possible.
Could you tell us a little bit about the story in your novel?
Well, the story of the Grays is the story of an attempt on the part of these beings to build a relationship with a community. It starts with a family and goes back generations as they create by drawing people together, certain people that they have chosen together for their genetic patterns and genetic makeup, to, over the years, create a certain child with a certain amount, certain types of ability and a certain level of intelligence. And they intend to use this child as the means by which they will communicate with the world, because the great problem they have is that they are so different from us that they have no direct way of communicating with us. Communication is the whole issue. They cannot speak. They can, but just in a very, very limited way. They can only communicate mentally, and we can't do that. We don't realize, don't know how to do that. They can't teach us because they have no starting place. And this is a book about their attempt to make a starting place where they have somebody who is part gray and part human, this child in the book, and he will be the bridge, of the communications bridge, so to speak. And in the story, government officials who are involved in this and very afraid of it react. They react very negatively to the presence of this child, and they try to gain control over the situation, and there is a conflict between the Grays and the government over the child. Essentially, that's what the story is about. How much of this is based on my actual experience with the Grays? All of it. it's a personal memoir in a certain sense, in that I didn't really write anything in this book that I don't believe has some basis in fact. Such a child, does he exist? I don't know. But he exists within me in the sense that I learned this method of communication. He exists within other people I know who can also communicate with the Grays, and it's not hard. It's not rocket science. It's just a matter of learning when they are speaking to you and how to react and how to form a response in your own mind that they can understand. And once you do that, I had them in my life for 11 years, and it was an extraordinary and productive time in my life. And I'm hoping that the book will enable people to have the same rich experience that I did if the Grays come into their lives.
Whitley, are the Grays still a part of your life?
The Grays are not so much a part of my life now as they used to be. I haven't had a direct contact experience in a long time. I think 97 or 98 might have been the last time I really saw the Grays. After I moved from upstate New York to Texas, the experience essentially ended. It was part of the place, I think. For whatever reason, I don't know, I couldn't even speculate. But once we left there, then the long period of intimate personal contact was over.
Are the physical descriptions of these beings in your book, are they fairly accurate as to the way that they appear to you?
Well, the physical descriptions are certainly what I saw, felt, smelled, all of it. The physical experience of being near the graves is as accurate as I could make it describe. Yes.